Last week, Kyle launched us into a summer series on the book of Proverbs. We're not going to be going through Proverbs chapter by chapter. It's not going to be too formal, but the great thing about the book of Proverbs is it's got lots of different themes in it, and so we can draw from one theme this week and another, and if you miss a week, it's going to be okay. And we're going to have a guest speaker this summer. Should I tell you who our guest speaker is going to be? It's we got Dale making an appearance, and so that'll be awesome. And so we've got a great summer planned. But Kyle launches off good last week. I think the theme, if you look at a big overall idea of the book of Proverbs, is choose your path. And fundamentally, there's this choice between wisdom and folly. And which one do you want to follow, right? So we want to get into sort of like the specifics. What does wisdom look like? And I don't know whether Kyle meant to last week, but he used a picture of something like this of a river. This is the Vedder River. And I thought it was a really good picture, because here's my analogy. I paddle down the Vedder River. It's an annual event for me, and I look forward to every year. As soon as spring is here, I'm looking at the Vedder River. Where's the challenges? Because every year it re-rates itself a little bit, and so every year I'm like, okay, where are the bends? Where are the challenges? Where are the easy parts? Where are the shallow spots? And I actually bike the whole loop, stopping multiple places to sort of get an idea of how I'm going to run the river this time. And when you run the river on a canoe, you want to pick your line. So as you're going, you're sort of like, you got to pick your line because you got to have a goal. And the river wants to throw you to the outside of curves, into rocks and into snags. And you can overcompensate and end up on the shallow side and hit rocks there. And so you pick your line. But the thing about taking it on the canoe is that in order to be able to navigate, you have to paddle. You actually have to paddle fairly hard. The river is taking you. You see guys doing it in inner tubes, right? You see them doing it in floaties, and it's like they've got no control. They're just flowing with the river. And you could do that. But with the canoe, you're gonna hit rocks and your fiberglass canoe isn't gonna stand up too well. So then you have to actually put in energy to actually go a little bit faster than the river so that you've got the ability to steer and the ability to control. And I think my analogy here is that life can be like that. And you can choose to go down the river in your inner tube and not really do much input. And life just happens to you. And the river throws you wherever it wants to. But I want to encourage you to be more like the canoe, Liz, is to tackle this with a sense of energy, with a sense of direction, and you take control over where you navigate down this river. You have choices to make. And I want to start by tackling that question, first of all. Do you have choices? Okay? There is a book out there by a guy named Sam Harris, named Free Will, and the irony of the title of the book is that his whole book is about the fact that you don't have free will. Sam Harris, I've seen him in debates and stuff. He seems like a really nice guy. I just fundamentally disagree with almost everything he believes. But he's an atheist, and he's at what we call a determinist. He believes that everything in your life is predetermined, that free will is just an illusion. And in the social sciences, there's a fair bit of data to suggest that we don't have as much free will as we think we do. And if we stop and think about this, okay, my first reaction is always, what do you mean? I got lots of choice. But wait a minute, let's just stop. Because you didn't have any say about your DNA, right? And your DNA says how tall you're going to be, how smart you're going to be, what color hair. Your DNA tells you whether you're going to like cilantro or not. And so there's a lot that comes with your DNA that presupposes, like, if I'd been built a little bit bigger, a little bit more muscular, that would have maybe made my life go in a different direction. I would have been better at sports. I would have got involved in different things. The fact that you should have seen me when I was 16. Like, I looked like I was 12. I have a picture of me when I was 16. I looked like I was 12. That had a huge impact on what activities I got involved in. I was not in football. I was in math club, okay? So it definitely has an impact on how, so DNA, huge impact. But also, you didn't get to choose your family. You didn't get to choose your parents. Do your parents have an influence on your life? Sure. You didn't get to pick what birth order. I can meet people, and after about half an hour of interacting with them, I can make a pretty educated guess whether they're the oldest or the youngest, because there's differences in how people come out. You had no say about that, right? It was predetermined. How much say did you have about your first friends? You go to school, it's like, hey, you want to be my friend? Like, and yet friendships, like parents will tell you, right? Your friends, huge impact. Especially as you get into later school years, your high school friends, strong impact on your life. The single biggest decision you will make in your life is who you choose to marry. And people sometimes make that choice rather flippantly. I can say that, because I did. Yeah, we can make huge, huge decisions, but are we making them? Or is it just circumstances and who we get thrown into and that kind of thing? Now, I would argue, like, his whole book is, no, you got free will is just an illusion, you got none. I disagree with him. And so, free will, illusion, or reality. Okay, the one thing I want to say, though, I think this is important, is that I kind of like, again, the river analogy. If I'm on my canoe in a lake, I can go any direction I want to as long as the wind and waves agree with me, right? But if I'm on a river, I don't have a lot to say about what direction I'm going. And so I kind of look at it kind of like that. There's a lot that's predetermined in life. And that, you might not like that feeling, but I think that there's... The good news about that is it gives you grace, it should, to stop judging yourself so much about some of the decisions you make. Because it's easy to sit in life and say, oh, what an idiot, why did I do that? And it's to be able to say, yeah, but, you know, what were the circumstances in my life as I made that decision? I can never think of song lyrics when I'm up here. So we sang that song and I like the lyrics. Why? Why would I make a bed in my shame when a fountain of grace is running my way? You know? It's so easy to sit in shame and to say, oh, why would I do that? But God says, I know your circumstances, I know you, and I'm extending grace to you. Why would we sit in shame? And so I think knowing that a lot of our decisions come because of DNA, because of background, because of family, all those sorts of things, and to extend grace to ourselves for some of that, but also to extend grace to people around us and say, I don't know their circumstances. That looks like a bonehead move, but I don't know what's going on in their life. I don't know what's going on with them. And so that we then likewise extend grace to other people as well. But I do believe fundamentally that we do have free will, that there's lots of things predetermined, but we have that opportunity, just like the canoe on the river, we can take control, we can make choices. And I think it's really important that we do that. That there's just, when we're confronted with situations, there's gonna be a natural reaction for us, and that we are able to say, stop ourselves and say, is that who I want to be? Like, yeah, they just cut me off and I want to really get mad at them, but is that the person who I want to be? Here's the situation. The freedom I have is how do I want to react to that situation? I can go with my gut and my instinct and my automatic reaction, or I can try to rise above that. There's a saying in the South, you rise above your raising. And I encourage us to rise above our raising, rise above what's going on. There's a book, I've mentioned it before, I think it's a really significant book. If you want to read something that really touches on something important, it's a guy named Viktor Frankl, and the book is called Man's Search for Meaning. And Viktor Frankl was a psychologist who was thrown into a concentration camp in World War II. And so he witnessed fellow prisoners give up, lose hope, and die. And he witnessed the difference between people and how they responded. They were in a situation where free choice was completely stripped away from them. They had no control over their lives. They were told what to do, when to do it, and they were dehumanized. And he noticed that people that were in those circumstances that were able to find meaning in their suffering, were able to find something to hang on to, were people that could survive in that. If they were able to recover their humanity and say, those people are doing this to me, they're robbing me of my humanity, but I know God is my creator and I'm a child of God, and hang on to a sense of who they are in spite of all that dehumanizing, they are the ones that were able to survive. And so I think for all of us, we can make that choice. Who am I as a child of God? Who do I want to be? And let's make some choices so that life is more like us on the canoe than us on an inner tube going down the river. And that's what my hope would be for you. And so today, I want to talk about friendship and choosing friends, because there is no other, like choosing your spouse and choosing your friends are the two things that are going to influence who you become, who you are, especially young people. Like, please notice and choose friends wisely, because your group of friends have such a strong influence on what you consider normative, what your norms are. This is normal. I remember, it's funny because I still remember that moment, and it happened over getting close to 50 years ago. My last year of high school, I worked at a grocery store. It was a big grocery store, and I was sort of on the, I wasn't the cool kid, and there was other, there were cool kids working at the grocery store, and one guy had a car, it was a convertible, cool car, and so I'm working there, and not really in, and then they were going for lunch, and we had a lunch break, and they said, Jerry, you want to come for lunch? I'm like, cool, I get invited along, and so that's, I remember feeling like, wow, that's awesome, and we went to some fast food place, and we were driving back, and one of the guys had his bag of garbage and he threw it out on the street. Nah. It's something that's always irritated me, littering just, as soon as he did that and I looked at that garbage going across the street, like I was embarrassed to be there. I was ashamed. I was like, these are not my people. This is not, like, I literally wanted to jump out of the car and grab the garbage because it just bugs me. But I just remembered that strong sense of, like, this is not my group. This is not my tribe. And when we got back to the store, I was like, I'm never going for lunch with them again. Because, and it always sounds stupid and small, but just the value system was theirs. And even just the way they were talking, the way they were being, I was like, this isn't my tribe. And so I think recognizing who you want to be and hanging out with people that are your tribe, I think is super, super important. And so Proverbs has a bunch of things to say about friends. Like Kyle said last week, the first, I think, 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs isn't the short little pithy little Proverbs that we're used to, but are actually conversations from a father to his child. And so Proverbs 1:10-19 says, "My child, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us wantonly ambush the innocent like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole like those who go down to the pit, we shall find all kinds of costly things, we shall fill our houses with spoil, throw in your lot among us, we will all have one purse.'" It sounds silly when he says it like that, and it doesn't usually happen like that. We get in with a group, and slowly we, sort of like the frog in the boiling water or the jet slowly heating water, we get acclimatized, adjusted to some different sets of values, and all of a sudden we find ourselves like really odd things are normalized. People that end up in prison don't usually end up there because they just made one bad decision, but they got in with a group of people and things got normalized. I worked at a Hostess potato chip factory for a year, and you know, you just randomly end up sitting with some people for coffee break. And somehow or another, the one of the guys at the table that I usually sat with was a Hell's Angels biker, okay? And I got to know him, and he seemed like a reasonable guy. So I actually asked him, like, why are you part of this motorcycle gang? And he was like, "I like the people, I like the lifestyle." And I was like, okay. Like this guy, sadly, he was on his motorcycle, Harley, and somebody pulled up beside him and shot him, and that was how he died. I made the news, and so I was like, I know that guy. But, you know, it was part of, like, he was looking for belonging, and this motorcycle gang offered him belonging, and he was like, yeah. And suddenly, things that we would not think of doing are slowly introduced, and so we need to be watchful, mindful. And so the father says, "My child, do not walk in their ways. Keep your foot from their paths, for their feet run to evil. They hurry to shed blood. For in vain is the net baited while the bird is looking on, yet they lie in wait to kill themselves and set an ambush for their own lives. Such is the end for all who are greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its possessors." As we start down a certain path, the impact comes back to us. We start being people that are dishonest, then people don't trust us, and that doesn't end up being good for us in the long run. It ends up taking our own lives. And so just being aware of the friendships that we make and looking to say, is this my tribe? Is this my group? Is look at the people and say, is this what I aspire to be? Proverbs 12:26, "The righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray." We probably don't have as much choice as we think we do, but one of the things we can definitely choose is who our friends are going to be. I was thinking about choice this morning, because last night Elaine and I were like, what are we gonna do for dinner tonight? And the choices, you know, are like Noodle Box or Domino's, or but we went with Shandahar last night, and it sure seemed like we made choices. It seemed like, do we want this, do we want that? And you know, I got dressed this morning, you know, I was gonna go jeans, and then I was like, oh, wear these, this is, anyways. And then my wife said, the grays don't really work, Jerry. I'm like, I'm not changing. So you get what you get, right? I made choices, whether they were good or not, I don't know. Anyways, it seems like we make choices, but a lot of times there's a lot of circumstantial stuff that feeds into those choices. But we can choose our friends, and we can say, this is a group that I like. Do not make friends with hot-tempered person. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn their ways and get yourself ensnared. As we are with people, we what their norm is becomes our norm, and very soon we find ourselves reacting in certain ways. And I think that when we get married, I think it's, you don't marry the family, But the family has a huge influence on that person. And so it is important to look at the family and say, how that's their norm. What's that going to mean in the family, in the marriage relationship? My first wife's family was quite hot-tempered, and so maybe if I had stopped and reflected, is that the way I want my family life to look like? It would have been, but I wasn't very wise back when I was 23 and making that decision. And so, I don't live in the past anymore. I used to. I think by DNA, I'm a fairly aft-looking person. I get kind of, weepy-eyed about, but, I've learned over life to be more forward-looking, and I definitely am in a place where I don't spend a whole lot of time in regret or thinking. It's sort of like, I'm here now. I may not like how I got here, but here I am, and I'm in a pretty good place now, and let's look forward. Like, where are we going now? And I definitely encourage you to be a forward-looking person, because looking back doesn't get you anywhere. Like, here you are. Now, and let's make some wise decisions going forward. So I want to give you a friend inventory, a friend-entory, to sort of like, hey, let's stop and think about our friends, and maybe, like, as I'm choosing friends, some ideas about what we're looking for. Do they motivate me to be a better person? I think that's an important question. Proverbs 13, verse 20. Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. I always think it's important to say, I want my friends to be people that inspire me to be better. I want friends that lift me up. That maybe friends that, oh wow, I wish I was that good. I wish I was that. Help you be led forward. And so do they invite you? Do they help you to become a better person, or are they dragging you down? Do they celebrate God's blessings in my life? Proverbs 11:10, when the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. We want people to rejoice with us and to celebrate us. We want to know that they want good things for us. It's easy to sort of see sometimes when people, they're kind of jealous of you or whatever. You want people that are not going to hold things against you. Like, oh, good things happen in your life. You want that to be a celebration. Also, on the flip side, do they have my back? Proverbs 17:17, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity. Do your friends, are they there when life turns more difficult? Are they there to support you and help you? And you would want that. I think that's one of the awesome things about Crossroads, is that I think we are there for people as they go through challenges and difficulty, and we want to see that with our friends. And do they hold me accountable out of love? Proverbs 27, verse 6. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. False praise is not useful, but sometimes as friends we have to say tough things challenge people, and the Bible talks about spurring one another on to good works, and so finding friends that can hold you accountable in some way. And I know I've said this before, but I picture our friend life. We should always have people that are further down the path from us, people that we can look up to, people that can be our mentors, our guides, our helpers. But we also need to be in a role where we're helping people, so that we're the person, that we're the mentor, we're helping, and so lifting other people up and helping them out and holding them accountable. I think we should be in both kinds of relationships, and so I encourage you to think about who are the people that are lifting me up, and who are the people I'm trying to lift up? And I encourage you to be in those. I picture back in the day when we were a less mobile society, when families were close together. I think grandfathers and grandparents and parents, fulfilled the role of the mentor, and then we would, as parents and as grandparents, help support people coming up. I think with the breakdown somewhat of the family and the increased mobility, I didn't have a relationship with my grandparents because they were all in Holland, my kids didn't have much of a relationship with their grandparents because their grandparents were all in Ontario, but I think that was what... That's the beautiful thing, is if family can do that. But if you don't have that, then we can do that as a church family. We can do that as friends. And so I invite you to think about, as you do your friend inventory, who are your mentors, who are your people that are holding you accountable, and who can you support, and who can you love. And finally, do they let me be their friend? There's got to be mutuality. There's got to be reciprocity. Is that the right word? You need both. If it's all giving to you, then that's not really a friendship. It's a mentorship. We want to have it work both ways. And so to consider that level of mutuality as well. So I invite you today, over this next week, to do a little bit of a friend inventory and think about, who are my friends? How am I being lifted up? I'm sure if you are a kid and you have parents, your parents are only too happy to tell you the friends that they want you to have, the ones that they don't. But it is part of defining who we are. And I do encourage you to think about, who am I? Who do I want to be? What direction am I heading? Like, pick your line as you go down the river. Don't let the inner tube just throw you around. Be in the canoe, pick your line, and make those choices. Rise above your raising, rise above some of the natural things, and make those choices. So friends, I think, is a huge first step to that. Let's close in prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you, God, for the love that you give us. Thank you for these words of wisdom that come from the book of Proverbs. I just ask you, Lord, to help us find those friends that lift us up, Lord, to guide us and teach us as we continue down this pathway called life. In Jesus' name, amen.